This is Scott.
This is Pat.
We have a great program today. You know, the funny thing about being a financial investor is how much should you save today versus spend today? And even as you're in now retirement, should you spend? Should you save?
Yeah, it's a difficult, difficult question. We're going to talk about that today on the show. We're also going to talk about some implementation of a couple new rules that might save you a ton of money.
Yep, so stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Providing guidance as you plan and transition into retirement for over two decades, here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us on this, Memorial Day weekend?
It is.
Kind of the official kickoff to summer, I think. Of course, the time to remember all those who had served us.
And, served our country. And
absolutely.
Not only our country, many countries.
Yeah, no kidding. So anyway, I hope everyone's having a great Memorial Day weekend and glad you are with us on listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. So glad you are joining us today. As I think we've got a great program.
I do.
Lined up.
In fact, I was just on... I was on the phone yesterday with a lady from the cable company. Yeah, the cable. I was changing the cable at my house. As I do often, every 12 months, I call and ask them for better pricing. My wife's an accountant. This is sort of what we do around the house. And as she said, the lady...
You know what that reminds me of? When I was a kid, my stepmother, which was British, and every week, Scott, you know how much money I saved this week shopping? I know, Mom, how much is I saved $12.84. And she would clip coupons. She'd go to like six different stores around town. She'd take all day long to save the $12. And I was always perplexed. I thought, that's great. I'm like, I wonder how much money would you make if you worked during those times. I didn't say that to her.
Yeah, because that one, because first of all, she's your stepmom.
I never thought how much gas she used. Anyway, finish your story.
Oh.
And I use coupons, don't get me wrong.
We have it on the calendar. Once a year we call and we say, oh, we need a lower cable bill, and they ask for a new contract. And you can do it while you're driving, sitting in traffic. So it's easy. But the lady on the phone asked me, and I got a kick out of it. She said, what are you doing this weekend for the holiday weekend? The lady on the phone.
It's the new friendly.
I said to her, I'm coming to your house. We're having a barbecue. And I thought, they do this at the grocery store too. They're like, oh, what, do you have big plans this weekend? Maybe I do, maybe I don't. I'm not going to discuss it with you. Are you allowed to say that?
Your point is that maybe the customer service thing is going a little too far when you have such a low level of business interaction.
Oh, I've never talked to him before. I've never met this lady. She's half a country away.
I like it at the grocery store when they'd say, so what are you doing this weekend?
Really?
Oh, they take notice of me. I'm a human being.
You like that?
I kind of like it.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
All right. Well, this is a financial program. I can't think of one financial nugget to take away.
I save money on my cable bill.
It has been a running list for me to do is a home audits. You can actually save a lot of money if you step down, because they get you in early and they slowly start ratcheting up the rates. The cable, the phone.
The alarm service, the gardener, all those rich people things.
The gardener.
The guy comes to the house, stands in the front yard for no apparent reason. You're paying him too much.
Hey, would love to take some calls and hear some financial questions, not the issues you've had with the cable woman or man, but things that are going on in your life. Whether it has to do with your retirement, how to best save for your retirement. Maybe someone's trying to pitch you some financial product. You're wondering if that's the right thing. Maybe you're trying to figure out how to best handle some money you've come into, looking at some estate planning, whatever the case. Our number to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And numerically, 1-888-242-6766. Again, we'd like to take your call, 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're in Sacramento talking with Bill. Bill, you're with Hanson McLean.
Morning, Scott.
Good morning, Bill. You got Scott and Pat here. What can we do for you?
Okay. I have a little problem. My wife, Kathy, just generated, so her annuity she has is a non-qualified annuity, and I guess I'd be receiving her annuity beneficiary. So I was wondering, how can I avoid the tax? Of the annuity.
Did you say it was non-qualified or a qualified annuity?
the non-qualified.
And what were the source of the dollars that she put into the annuity?
About $20,000.
And where did the, and she did it like down at the bank or through an advisor? Yeah. A salesperson, not necessarily an advisor, they put the $20,000. It wasn't through a payroll deduction. Is that correct?
Well, she bought it with her own money.
Okay.
Back in 20 years ago, and you said it through a bank employee or something of that sort.
And what's the value of it? What's the value of it today?
$75,000? Correct.
And she put $20,000 in how long ago?
About 20 years.
Okay.
And do you need any additional income at this point?
Not really, but I was wondering if I'd be able to somehow avoid the lump sum amount, and somehow I could be able to maybe distribute it to my grandchildren, 529 plans directly.
Got it. Got it. So so the question is, how do I avoid the taxes on this, and can I put this money into
one of the big downsides of annuities is that buildup of tax-deferred growth will one day be taxed. There's even if you hold it until you pass away or your spouse passes away, there's no step-up in basis as there would be with other assets.
So, yeah, so if you had gone out and bought the S&P 500 back then, you would have paid a little bit of taxes along the way.
Hardly any, basically.
And then you would pay capital gains, not ordinary income, if you were to liquidate it, and if there was a death of either of you,
it would all be eliminated.
It would all be eliminated, which is one of the reasons we actually are not huge fans of non-qualified annuities.
The tax structure.
So here's what you can do.
They would pass you the set lump sum, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so what happens if you liquidated this today, just went down there and called the insurance company and said,
just send me a check.
Just send me a check. You would have ordinary income taxes on this of $55,000.
Not the taxes. You would have ordinary income to declare $55,000,
which would be taxable both state and federal. If you went in and withdrew $10,000 and didn't liquidate the whole thing, the whole $10,000 would be taxable until you actually got to your basis.
Your best bet is probably, what's your other income? What's your family income the next couple of years on an annual basis?
It's just my pension.
And how much is that?
$100,000
a year.
$100,000
a year? Yeah. So okay. My recommendation would be to pay this thing, annuitize it over a 5 or 10 year period.
Or just, how old are you, Bill?
I'm 76.
I would just, look, I think you probably just should take it, put it in your name. And not do anything unless the grandkids as beneficiaries. You can't get it into 529 plans without a tax consequence.
And you don't need the income.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to go with Scott on this one.
Unless whoever you want is beneficiaries, because you're in a pretty high tax bracket based on your income.
And you don't necessarily need the money. You wanted it for the kids' education.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can just continue this annuity.
You don't have to actually liquidate it.
I'm assuming most insurance companies will allow you to do a spousal continuation.
Well, she's a co-owner. I mean, she is the owner and the annuitant.
And you are the beneficiary, I assume.
But did she pass?
Yes.
I'm sorry, did I miss this? Did she pass away?
Yes.
She just passed away.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to do anything with this.
You can just,
just make yourself the owner. I think I'm with you.
He's the beneficiary. You just become, most policies will have a spousal continuation.
And that's a fair bit. And then when do I annuitize it?
Maybe you don't ever.
Maybe
you just leave it for your heirs.
Yeah.
But if you go down to the bank where you bought this, they're going to try to stuff a big fat annuity down your throat.
Yes, they'll get a new contract, new commission, which is not what you need.
You don't need that.
I would for now. Look, there's no...
I wouldn't do anything for now.
And all you got to do is say, I just want to change this to a spousal continuation, have the same policy in my name. I don't want to deal with it now. Now's not the best time to make big financial decisions.
And if you were
my
father, I'd say don't do anything. Just make sure that if it's a variable annuity, the allocation is correct, and just keep it for your heirs.
Yep.
You don't have to do anything.
Most annuity salesmen won't. That's not the plan because they won't get paid a commission. Unless
they're
going to
tell you that and they use the word matured or you have to move it. You don't.
Yeah, you don't.
One of my bank advisors said you could roll over to a IRA.
He's wrong.
Not if it's a non-qualified.
He's wrong. He or she is wrong. Not if it's a non-qualified. Uh-huh. If non-qualified, you can't roll it
That's
to an
correct.
IRA. Don't ever talk to that person again, please.
That is like 101.
Yeah. You don't need a financial advisor helping you right now, frankly, on this, Bill. I think you should just tell the insurance company you just want to continue the policy, have your name being listed as the annuitant.
All right.
Spousal continuation. And if you're forced to do something with the new contract, I'd do something. I'd try to keep it with the same insurance company. Say, look.
I've never seen them forced to do that on a spousal.
No, I haven't either. List your name on
it. They sent me a letter that here's the option. You could take it out lump sum and sit it in their company name, and then it would just write a withdrawal check until you liquidate it.
Well, is one option just to continue?
Yeah. Then you could put it in. We will take the money and put it into the company name, and you just write a draft, a withdrawal draft, and you'll be able to withdraw this money, and we'll pay you a 0.40% compound.
Yeah, and that sounds like I think if you look deeper, I think there's an option you can just continue this policy.
Yes.
That's what I'd be looking at, and if you can't continue the policy, Bill, then you'd want to see for the insurance company. Is there some annuity I can keep this with you without having to get a brand new surrender period on that? Because otherwise, you're going to have to. You can put it in your. He can't even do that either. He should be able to. You continue it on. Just continue it on as a spousal continuation. Yeah. So I wish. Sorry about what you're going through, Bill. And again, we always like if someone's faced it with something long. You know, you have a death of a spouse. I mean, a Hanson McLean. Our advice is typically. Do as little as possible the first several months.
Or a year.
Yeah. Unless you are forced to make a decision, don't make that decision.
Yeah. You're going through enough already.
Yeah. I like the idea. Let's just continue.
And I can't, there's very few financial decisions you need to make immediately the death of a spouse.
That's right.
Very few.
Even if a salesman says otherwise. So
anyway, appreciate the call. Yeah,
thank you, Bill. So I tell you, we find it interesting in our industry. The Department of Labor had issued a ruling several months back. And remember, Department of Labor comes under the administration, the presidential administration branch, not legislative through Congress. So this is one of the divisions, I guess, within the administrative body, where they appoint the Department of Labor and they come up with the various rules and whatnot. And they came up with a rule called the Fiduciary Rule for Retirement Accounts.
Which is interesting because historically, the Department of Labor only oversaw company pension plans.
Well, they did a bunch of other stuff.
But in our sphere, the discussion we're having today, which is in the financial services industry, they were overseeing company 401ks
and making sure companies weren't taking it. Look, if you have a payroll deduct, for example, a 401k, the Department of Labor makes sure that money goes directly to the 401k, not to the company's coffers, those sort of things.
So
did a lot of they do a lot of good.
No question. In the last few years, they have been trying to take more and more control over IRAs by saying it's an extension of their mandate, which is to protect the workers. And an IRA, many of them actually start with company pension plans and then move into the IRAs.
The majority of money in IRAs came from 401ks, 403bs, that sort of thing.
So that they should have oversight over the IRAs. And that's what the Department of Labor has said, and that you must act as a fiduciary. That if you are an advisor, you have to act as a fiduciary, which is you have to act in the best interest of the client.
Yes. So we saw this fiduciary rule. It was supposed to be implemented. And then when Trump was elected, Trump says, no, we're going to kill that. And there's some people that say they don't like it because they don't like the fact that it's the Department of Labor. Some say we don't need more regulation. Anyway, so it looked like it was on the back burner.
And then it was resurrected again in the last couple of weeks.
Essentially, the new Department of Labor chair says, look, there's no really way around this thing at this point, just the way it was put into law. So it's going to become law. So beginning in June, it's going to begin to take effect with the full effect next year. What's this mean for you? All right. So here's what this means. You've got you've had a relationship with a stockbroker or financial advisor.
A commission-based salesperson. Can we say it?
Yeah. Well, the relation, this has to do with commissions on retirement accounts.
And it may not, they might not. Your relationship may not be solely based on the commissions. They might be, that person may be offering some guidance in other areas, but the main avenue of compensation to that person or firm takes place in the form of commissions and not fees based on their fiduciary responsibility deal.
Commissions and other maybe back-end deals.
Hidden fees.
Yes. Some other hidden fee type things. And so what's been interesting to see in the industry the last year, as this has been looming, we've seen a number of changes. We've saw a lot of these big firms say, we're going to make changes to the way we compensate our advisors. We're going to make change. We saw Edward Jones was one of the first ones says, we're going to stop having commission-based accounts because they used to sell a lot of upfront sales-loaded mutual funds.
What they would call A shares.
Kind of one of the last big firms that they were really slow adopters to move into kind of a more of a modern fee-based advice. So they finally said, all right, we're going to be moving our model. But what we've seen this last few weeks is some of the big brokerage firms. Here's what I think is fascinating. If you've worked with the same stockbroker, they don't call themselves stockbrokers anymore, but they work with the big brokerage firms, the big firms you think of.
They call themselves financial planners or financial advisors.
They're all financial advisors.
Wealth managers.
Oh, yeah, wealth managers.
Hear that a lot, wealth management.
But if you've worked with the same one for a number of years, odds are they've switched firms while you've worked with them. Not just the name changed, but they've actually up and left from one firm to another.
They might have gone from Merrill Lynch to Morgan Stanley, or from Morgan Stanley to Merrill Lynch, or
Bear Stearns, some of the old names, Payne Weber, to this. So all of a sudden your broker calls you up on a Friday afternoon or Saturday, says, hey, I'm no longer with the previous firm. Here's all the great reasons why I left. How's it's going to be awesome for you. Sending out some paperwork, sign it and send it back. Right? So there's a good chance you've had that. What has been happening, these big firms, is they've made these huge upfront bonuses to entice brokers to leave their previous employer and come to join them.
Let's give an example.
They might say, look, we'll give you $1 million if you come join us
and move
X amount of dollars. It's predicated upon how many assets, how many client relationships and money. How much money can you bring to our new firm? And they'll give, let's say it's $1 million bonus. They'll give this bonus in the form of a loan that gets forgiven over a number of years.
So let's say 5 years. So they come.
Usually longer, 7 or 8.
Big firm A goes to an advisor, big firm B, and says, hey, I'll give you $1 million if you move $50 million over to our firm in the next 12 months.
Now, this is an important discussion. If your broker works for a big firm, it's important that you understand some
because
of these conflicts.
There's a good chance
interest.
It's going to happen. So we're going to move these dollars over. Oh, and by the way, Mr. Broker, I'm going to give you $1 million. We're going to give that over a 7-year period, $150,000 a year. And that's just, this is yours. This is the incentive we're going to give you to come over. But the clients aren't aware that this is happening. The story is, oh, this firm is so much better than I'm going to. Those other guys, they changed their culture. They're no longer good people.
Whatever
the story happens to be. Well, the DOL, the Department of Labor.
With this new fiduciary rule. Some of the big firms are saying, wait a minute, could we now be in violation by offering these upfront, this incentive? Maybe it's not disclosed properly. Maybe it's actually offering an incentive for someone to move their retirement account, which is now going to be the Department of Labor is now having rules that says we need to act as a fiduciary. Maybe by doing this, we're not putting our client's best interest first.
And they're not.
Well, we've said for years in this program, it's not.
They're not.
The clients,
I think
it's
a good
interest.
Scott, I got to tell you, this DOL rule. I'm not big on government regulations, but
I don't like the fact that I would like the Securities and Exchange Commission to have this.
Yeah. Actually, and all they really needed to say was just full and complete disclosure.
So we're seeing these big firms saying we're no longer going to offer these big upfront bonuses.
And good for the consumer.
Not all the firms are doing that, but we've seen a couple of the big ones say, hey, we're going to stop doing this practice because we don't think it's... But it's basically because of the fiduciary rule. So
if you have an advisor who is a commission-based advisor, because of the implementation of the Department of Labor rules on the fiduciary standard, expect some changes in your account over the next 12 months.
And if you don't like it, go talk to somebody else.
Yeah. Actually, go talk to a fiduciary who's been a fiduciary for a long period of time.
Yeah, someone who's already acted in it, right. Not new to this game.
Yeah.
Somebody who's been a fee-based advisor for a long time. Yeah. I agree with you there. Hey, we're going to go back to the phones here. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number, 1-888-2-HANSON. And we're talking to Phil in the Bay Area. Phil, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're talking about retirement. So I have a public employee retirement pension. It's a defined benefit, as you know, meaning that I get a certain amount of dollars every month until I die. Mm-hmm. But I've always been frustrated by the fact that I can't control how that money is being invested. So I have wondered, is it totally idiotic to consider taking out the lump sum payment and then investing it on my own or going with the sure thing. Now, I know that the dollar amounts are considerably different if I take a lump sum now versus the lifetime value. But have you heard of any folks doing that kind of thing?
So are you from what? Is it a federal pension or a state pension?
No, it's a state pension.
Okay.
So if you worked for a private employer, let's say you worked for AT&T, for example, they have a traditional pension, and they also have it's a being phased. Most new employees don't have it, but the older ones. And when you go to retire, you can either take a monthly pension or you can take a lump sum. Now, in a case like that, the lump sum is essentially equal to the present value of that future income stream. So the amount of money you get as far as a cash out is a considerable amount that most people can go out and invest it and generate the similar kind of return to provide that monthly check.
That's the private employer. Mm-hmm. But on the public employer side,
different deal.
It's a completely different deal because you have a cost of living increase that's built into mm-hmm. it.
And my understanding,
the termination values on these lump sums are actually smaller than the net present value.
Yes, much smaller.
So have they given you that number? And it also depends on your health. If you were in poor health.
And no beneficiaries.
You may consider that. So do you have a beneficiary on that, which means if you were to pass away, is there a stream of income that goes to a spouse or a partner?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. If you were to pass away.
Have they given you what the numbers would be as far as a lump sum?
Well, the lump sum, the aggregate lump sum would be just over $400,000. But I believe if I was to take a lump sum, I don't get that total value. I only get the portion that I contribute.
That's right. And the growth on that.
Right. And then the lifetime value was estimated to be somewhere around 1.5 or 1.6.
So why would you want to take?
So what is the monthly pension?
It's gross is 9,000.
Okay, and what is your age?
54.
And is that a single life only pension on that?
What are you frustrated about? You said you were frustrated. I'm thinking, if I were 54 and retiring, I'd be happy as a clam for having a $9,000 a month pension.
But you see all of the issues that are popping up with, this is CalPERS, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, and the issues with the tobacco company investments and all of that and the instability of that. It's just, it's one of those things where I want to make sure that I'm secure going forward. And do I want to keep all my money there?
So, did you retire from a municipality or from the state itself? A municipality.
From a municipality. Right.
Okay. So the municipalities have actually a little bit more risk in them.
We're seeing these little tiny ones.
Well, and they're terminating out.
But these are like 12 employee type.
Yeah. So the group that you retired for, hundreds and hundreds of employees in that municipality? Okay.
Yeah, there were about over 400.
Okay.
So if they're offering you $1.4 million as a cash out,
he's 54.
You might choose to take that. But they're not.
That's not correct. The cash out.
That's $400,000. So the answer to your question is
nothing you can do.
There's absolutely no reason in the world for you to take that $400,000. None.
Okay.
Zero. In fact, you could get more on the open market.
I'll buy that
stream of income from you, and I'll probably give you over $1 million for it. Right? Assuming you have a normal life.
Yeah, what are those ads?
J.W.
It's
Wentworth.
My money and I want it now. I'd call those guys.
you could get well over $1 million. And in fact, if even they offered you the $1.5 million for this $9,000 a month, and you have a normal life expectancy, our recommendation would not be to take that $1.5 million either. Because of the fact that you have a cost of living adjustment on this, because of the fact that your municipality isn't like a three-person sanitation district, and because of your age, I'm assuming you retired as a safety worker prior to the age of 55. Is that a fair bet?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So you absolutely should continue that and not worry about what's going to happen with that pension.
All right.
Not even, don't give it another thought. Not another thought.
Okay. There's nothing you could do about that. There's nothing you could do about it.
In the news, I'll ignore it.
Yeah. Okay, perfect.
There's nothing you could do, right?
And as we all know, most of it's fake news, so you should ignore it anyway, Phil.
That's right.
Fake news.
Hey, thanks so much, you guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Phil. And, right. You know, it's interesting. So CalPERS, there's all kinds of restrictions that, for political purposes, we don't like this. We want this out.
Tobacco.
But there's newer things, too, that they've been pushed through. But it doesn't impact how much someone's pension is going to be.
That's correct. That's it only impacts the returns.
The returns, which means the taxpayers might have to kick in more dollars to make up the shortfall.
It's become a political football. The pension fund has become a political football.
Completely. How strange is that? Yeah. A government program becomes a political football. That is weird. You never see that kind of thing.
We never would have guessed.
No. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue with this fantastic discussion. Plus, we'll take some calls and a guest as well. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. Stick around for more Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Back to one of the longest-running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hi, right, welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us on this Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, nice weekend to be with family and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, kids are home from school. Son graduated. Nice. 3 in college now.
So Pat's not retiring time soon.
No, actually I'm not.
And one more
for
to go.
For 2 reasons. One, I need to really be, this is a time in my life where I actually think more about getting more and more engaged in business and the community as my responsibilities to my children have started to taper off. You know?
I had taken a day and I took a day off last week.
Okay.
And
I didn't know about this.
I took Monday off. And I went for a nice bike ride. Actually, I rode my bike around Lake Tahoe with a friend, good friend.
Very nice.
My friend, he's 63 years old, owns a business. And we're talking about retirement age. Actually, one of his business partners retired like a year or two ago. And I said, how's he doing? He said, well, he gained like 40 pounds. And it's one of those conversations. And he says, I don't want to retire until I'm at least 80, he tells me. And then later he says, actually, when I'm 80, I don't think I'm going to retire. And so as we're talking about this conversation, he says, I've really figured out to have a good balance in my life where I've got some responsibility at work. I've got this, clearly have responsibilities, but I can manage those responsibilities without taking up tons of time. And I'm able to take time off. I've got grandkids that I love spending time with. He says, he's got one of my sons is involved with some special needs, taking care of special needs people where they've got this ranch. I go and spend time helping them with that. So he says, I've got the luxury of having this.
Because
he's self-employed.
So.
Go be self-employed.
No. So the point being is actually, if you're an employer, you should think about this. We have a program here at Hanson.
We have 4,500 clients or so at Hanson. I think over 7,000 individuals we work with at Hanson McLean. The good port number of them are retired. We've clearly we're experts at helping people transition from work into retirement, whatever retirement looks like for them and everyone's situation.
But the financial thing for us, we do it all the time. And people prepare for retirement, and sometimes it comes a little bit sooner than they thought. But the reality is most people don't necessarily want to retire. They just want control over their schedules. They want control over their life, how it's being played out. And a good employer that has skilled employees.
And they may not want to, they don't want to be working 60 hours a week.
Correct.
Scott, because there's a lot of people that are professionals. They're like, they're still traveling a ton.
Yeah.
They're like, I can't. You know.
But so the idea is that for the employer to come together to try to sculpt a quasi-retirement or a nice path to retirement. For that person. It's not possible in every profession, but it is possible in many.
Yeah. And for some people, look, I get it. You want to retire, retire at 60?
You're done.
Great. Yeah. I totally understand that. Just a lot of people want to have some sort of engagement. And there's more businesses started today by people over age 50 than there are businesses started by people in their 20s. So in spite of the kind of what you hear about is you think of the startup entrepreneurs.
The Gen X. Are we in the Gen X boomers?
No, they're millennials.
Oh, millennials.
Are they, I'm a Gen X.
I can't keep them straight.
At 50 years old, I'm Gen X.
Millennials. The guys millennials that wear the straight pant legs.
The tight jeans and the multicolored socks.
Yeah, that's it. Those are millennials.
Yeah. They're the with the long beards.
They all have long beards.
You know what I mean? The beards? And they don't shave any portion of their neck either. Their neck's full of beard, too.
We sound really old. And they listen to that that crazy music.
Crazy.
We sound old.
So Scott, so we were talking about the trade-off between, you know, work and not work and retirement, not retirement. But there is a big trade-off that takes place in people's life, which is when is it okay to spend and when is it okay to save? And
those are not easy discussions, right? The decisions.
Yeah. And is it okay just to spend now and not save? Right. I'll give you an example. Client, lots and lots and lots and lots of money. Afraid of running out. The only way I could get this couple to actually spend money is to send it to them on a monthly basis automatically into their checking account and not allow them to return it to me.
Did they want to spend the money?
They did once we got them started. Once we got them started. Once they became assured that they would not run out of money in their lifetime, a high degree of assurance that they would not run out of money in their lifetime, that they were okay with that.
Well, as Pat likes to say, you show me somebody who doesn't worry about money, I'll show you somebody who doesn't have any money, right?
So right. I mean, even no, and not to say that flippantly, because even if you're poor and you worry about money, what you're trying to do is advance your station financially.
You're trying to get some sort of security.
Correct. At any degree. And yes. It might be buying a home. It might be getting a side business. Maybe worry is
not, it's not that you're...
Correct. If you're not concerned about money... I just didn't want to be flippant in that comment. I was thinking about that the other day because I have said that often and I thought, is that disingenuous to people that have no money? Well, listen, there was a time in my life when I had no money, but I did worry about it.
No, but I think part of it, look, 20 some odd years of doing this, we've seen people at retirement stage. I tell you what, here's what I've noticed. Someone comes into one of our Hanson McLean offices and has no concern at all about their retirement.
They're typically...
The ones that we have concern with before we even look at any numbers. Because if somebody comes in, they've never been concerned about money. No, I just never really worried about money. Never thought about much about it.
But I'm 62 and it's time for me to retire.
Oftentimes, those individuals just have not saved enough.
Doesn't mean they haven't saved at all. They oftentimes haven't saved enough.
Somebody comes in and has said, we're really concerned about retirement. We've been concerned about retirement since I was my first job. We've always been concerned. They're the ones that typically have done well. This last week, we met with an individual. He'd been a client of Hanson McLean for 19 years, retired 19 years ago in his early 50s, mid-50s. Okay? Still great health. Husband, wife, great health. Very active. Really interesting people, actually. I really enjoy them. They're just fascinating people. But they have
long-time clients of the firm, did you
19
say?
Years.
Okay.
Yeah. And have... plenty of assets. They live on a small percentage of their, plenty of assets. Most people would love to have this size portfolio. Live a very modest lifestyle. And they confided to me near the end of our meeting. They says, we find that we're still concerned about the future. When will that ever change?
And they're in their 70s?
Yes.
Okay.
Financially concerned.
And did you tell them it probably won't for them?
Well, so we had this discussion. One of them's mother was still alive and was running out of money, so had some
impact. Okay.
But I said, the interesting thing is that part of the reason, I said, the reason you have these assets is because you're concerned about the future and wanting to make sure you have money for the future. That's why you have them. It's no accident that you ended in retirement with a nice size investment portfolio. It's because you lived below your means your entire life.
And you probably invested... prudently, if not conservatively?
Yes. And one who never worried about the ups and downs of the markets.
Just stayed.
So it was always, the money was always for the future, not for today.
So was able to actually keep a diversified portfolio over a long period of time. Scott, I would argue that actually not spending the money provides as much peace. And happiness is not spending the money for some people. It provides as much peace and happiness as spending it is for others.
Well, a lot of people say, look, sometimes when you're younger in life, You think, well, if I get the, wait, I can't wait to get this house. I want, the perfect house. And then I've always wanted this car, a certain car. And then you get the car. And after, I think a lot of people after a while, it's like, you know, it's just stuff. And oftentimes we see people that's like, they clearly have the financial assets to buy whatever they want, drive whatever kind of car they want.
But they don't.
But they don't. They say it's just not that important to us.
Well, actually, they're buying whatever they want and buying whatever car they want, which is, it's a car.
Oftentimes, those that are driving the big fancy, not always, but oftentimes those are driving the newest, fanciest cars.
Big hat, no cattle?
Yeah.
Sometimes. Not always, but sometimes.
I talked to one of the guys who worked at the Mercedes dealers for years. He said, you would be amazed at the things people do to try to get into a Mercedes. Just to have that status car. He says their credit's a wreck. There's not a chance they should be driving a car like this. And they do it.
Anyway. Oh, for status.
Yeah, I guess.
Mm. I'm glad I don't have that.
I don't know.
Although, I probably have some because I used to, 30 years ago, I bought a Hyundai when Hyundais weren't actually a popular car.
Well, they were all economy cars back then.
Back then. And
today they've got a...
I bought it from a...
Just like when Honda first started. The first Honda? They were not a luxury. But now you have pretty nice Hondas.
Hyundais, right? And I bought it from a repossession lot. And both...
You have a different colored door? Door.
Fenders were right front and right left were dented. And so I went and bought used... I guess you'd call them used at the...
Salvage, pick and pull,
yeah,
or whatever.
But they would both fit, but they came from different years, so they had different light structures on the front end of this Hyundai. So if you looked at one side, if you looked from the passenger side, the light was in the middle of the thing, and if you looked for the other, there was no light at all. And I didn't care, because you couldn't see both sides at the same time. And it was cheap. So I guess what I am saying is there was a little bit of me not wanting to have to buy my cars at the repo lot anymore.
Okay, well, that's...
What?
Your car pieced together from pick and pull?
Yeah.
Well, of course.
I didn't want that anymore. I wanted to get past
that.
Well,
obviously. No one, I mean.
What do you mean? I could have stayed there. There's people that do.
I think most people that have cars that are pieced together from pick and pull, they're not doing it.
I'd be like one of those guys when I die, you read about the left all his money to a bunch of cats or something.
Cats. Pat left millions to cats to pick a pull car.
Yes. Sacrificed every bit of the way to get those cats a nice, nice.
But I think but Pat, you know, we have this discussion. What is important, though, when it's your finances and whether you are still years away from retirement and lots of competing financial needs or you're getting close to retirement, it's sitting down and figuring out what's really important to you. Because if having some financial independence and being at a point where retirement's an option for you at whatever age, you're going to have to make some sacrifices along the way.
Yes. And if I have these conversations, I have them probably 3 or 4 times a year with people that say, you know, I'm not seeing enough of my grandchildren. I'd love to spend more time with my grandchildren. And if they have the resources, I said, well, rent a house down at the beach and invite everyone. They'll come. If your grandchildren aren't visiting you enough and you have the financial resources, bring them on a trip. They will make time.
2 weeks ago, I had a conversation with a client. Very frugal individual, plenty of assets, very frugal. And he said they rented a house in San Diego on the beach last year, had the whole family come, kids, grandkids, they were all there. He says, oh yeah, it was a big, nice house. He said it cost me 10 grand for the week. Now this isn't, I don't know if this person ever spent 10 grand on a car.
Yes.
Right? And I said to him, because he was well into his 70s, I said, what a phenomenal investment.
Yeah, because he wasn't interested in the stuff anymore. He was interested in the experience. And his experience was having family together, right? And at that point in time, if you're renting a nice house like that, you're not only going to get the grandkids there, you're probably going to get the grandkids' friends. So you got to draw the line somewhere.
So anyway, but I think it really comes down to what's important to you, what sacrifices are you willing to take today? And you know, hopefully, if you're working with a good financial advisor, not one that says, here, we think that we're going to be buying this one particular stock or fund because we think you're going to get great returns, or, oh, oil should be now, or, oh, here's my viewpoint on where the stock market's going in the next 6 months. A good financial advisor really helps you find some clarity on some of these values.
In addition to that, helping you with your investments, but helps you think through
what the point of the money is.
Yes. And what is it you really want to accomplish? And we're all different humans.
Yeah.
We're all very unique and have different aspirations and whatnot. And by the way, we had a series of workshops over the last 2 weeks, very well attended. Hundreds of people attended those workshops.
Is that right, Donald Trump?
They were beautiful. They were fantastic. They were really, really, really great workshops.
So we had desserts at these workshops.
You never seen anything like it. They're the most phenomenal desserts.
No.
You couldn't get desserts anywhere like
There's
that.
There's a lot of people out
They're
there.
They're the best desserts ever.
I'm sorry.
Really, really great desserts.
I'm sorry he started it. A lot of people like Donald Trump, but you got to, even if you like Donald Trump, you got to admit that's a little bit.
I hear him say really three times in a row. I'm like, you sound like a young kid.
Anyway. The hyperbole is a little rich.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we had these great workshops, the greatest ever. And well attended. But we on our website, we have a guide that covers a lot of what we actually did in the workshop. It's our
Yeah, so if you're one of those that maybe you just don't like going to workshops, which we get, that's fine, or you weren't able to attend.
Yeah. It's our guide to the 7 personal decision points for retirement transition.
Yeah, and all you got to do is go to our website, handsomeclain.com, and you can get your own copy.
And while you're there, actually sign up for our weekly email. It's short. It's got a little bit of video in there, a little bit of radio. It'll take you less than 3 or 4 minutes. You don't even have to open it every week if you don't want to. You could just send it right to the trash if you don't want to read it. You read the headlines. You're like, oh, I don't want to read it this week. You send it to the trash. But if you like
how
it.
Works? How's the email thing work?
You can send stuff to the trash. But if you like
you send it to the trash.
You look at the headlines. You're like, oh, that's interesting. You could read it. That's how our email newsletter works. You could decide to read it or not read it.
There you go. All right. Hey, if you want to join Hanson McLean, our number to be part of the program here on Memorial Day weekend, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. But now we're going to talk real advice. So real advice here at Hanson McLean is, what should we do? I don't have a couple of shows. Well, we talked to one of our own financial advisors, who talks about a story of the client they worked with and or prospective client they worked with, some that they helped out, and we hear a bit of their story. Always keep in mind that their experience may not be your experience, and this is not intended to be a...
testimonial.
Yes, not intended to be a testimony whatsoever. So we're welcome on our program, Keith Johnson. Keith is a certified financial planner in our Denver office, and... Keith's got over 20 years of financial advisor experience and been working with clients throughout the greater Denver metro area for his career. Keith, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad you're with us. So tell us about a situation, a client you're working with, and what happened and all that stuff.
Recently met with someone. Well, the circumstances were pretty unfortunate. Her husband had passed away a little over a year ago. And she was simply looking for some guidance. She held a meeting with the advisor they'd been working with for many, many years. Initially, she went into the office to update her accounts, her beneficiaries, after her husband had passed. Then after that meeting, she really didn't hear anything from her advisor's office whatsoever. So one day she calls in and she asks what she should do with $200,000 that she received from a life insurance policy. So at this point, you know, they were a little more proactive in reaching out to her. So they did meet to discuss how to invest the proceeds from the policy. The recommendation from the advisor was to invest in a mutual fund that they were offering. And they were touting 8%+ returns over the last several years. Plus, it paid a great dividend. So she was on board until she actually asked, okay, how risky is this? The advisor's answer, well, actually, it was a question. He asked, is your house paid for? So she wondered, why does that matter? So that's kind of where she fanned the brakes, reached out to us just to get a second opinion.
And why? And tell me why it did or didn't matter. I don't. Where did that come up? Do you know that question is your house paid for?
Yeah, I've been doing this for 20 years. I'll never forget it. The response from the advisor was that if the markets tank, you lose the money in this fund, you can go to your home and live off the equity and take money out of that.
Really? For a widow? A recent widow?
Yep.
How old was the widow?
60.
All right.
So
the house is paid for by.
So what was? So tell us what your recommendation was. And so they had this advisor for a while. There's something in the conversation of the relationship that leads to a little bit discomfort. Then it leads to a little bit more discomfort, and then it causes this particular person to seek out different advice.
There has to be, think about it. There's, I mean, I've had the same dentist for 20 some odd years, the same accountant for a number of years.
You've got to be uncomfortable to switch.
Yeah, something's got to be wrong. Like my dentist, I assume he's doing a good guy. My teeth look okay. They're not falling out. I think he treats me fair and everything. The last thing I want to do is have to go to some new dentist. I'm going to be afraid maybe he's going to try to sell me some veneer. I don't know, sell me something. And, you know, I don't want to spend more time in the dental chair than I have to, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of like I'm good with the dentist I've got. So it same thing with financial advisors. There usually has to be some sort of pain or you're not getting the solution to your problem.
So how did she seek you out? And then what did you do, Keith?
She listens to the radio show. So we
and she still called.
Appointment. Yes. So we sat down for our first appointment, and that's what really stuck out to me. I mean, that was the sole reason. That advisor's response to say, "Is your house paid for?" That she started reaching out to other advisors. So she's going about this the right way. She's being very cautious, not making any rash decisions. When we sat down, I explained our process and said, "Okay, also as part of this, we'll go through a risk tolerance questionnaire just to see how you are as far as managing risk in the stock market." So we went through that, and this was interesting, actually. I took her portfolio, matched that up to her risk tolerance, and she was way too aggressive for how her score came back on that questionnaire.
But
so that was the first conversation. Go ahead.
But Keith, was she heavily involved in the financial decision prior to her husband passing away?
Great question, and not at all.
Okay, so this is for the rest of the listeners, and you've heard us actually talk about this. In fact, we talk about it today, how your risk tolerance will change because of a life event.
Absolutely.
And just because your husband or spouse's risk tolerance was high, and now you're responsible, your emotions are what are going to be driving the bus, not the deceased person. So
absolutely,
that's where you have to recognize, and that's why we always, if you listen to the show at all, is we say if there's a death or something takes place in the family, slow it down. There's no big hurry to make a decision. So their risk tolerance comes back lower. What was your recommendation?
She was more of a balanced style strategy investor, so more of a 50-50 portfolio. She was almost 100% equities in her current portfolio. And the recommendations that this advisor was suggesting would have only compounded the situation and made it worse.
And did she owe anything? Was the house paid for?
She has absolutely no debt.
Okay.
No,
did she need a high return to maintain her standard of living?
We actually discussed that. And based on her whole situation, she did not. So to take on more risk to get an additional percentage point or two made absolutely no sense in this case. It was more about, you're close to retirement. We need to manage this risk on the downside, and here's how we can help you.
Yeah. Well, hey, I appreciate you sharing that story with us. And can I tell you what, Keith, you know, so often people get, glad you're, thanks again, Keith, for being with us. So often, Pat, we see people, they kind of get confused on what's important to them.
Yes, but
if dying with the most amount of, if having the highest degree of probability that you're going to die with the largest amount of assets, if that's your goal, then you figure out how to live on very little and how to stomach big swings in the financial markets. Then it's good, you know,
situation, Scott, it wasn't the client that was confused; it was the advisor, or the advisor either acting from ignorance or a belief that the only thing that the advisor should worry about is getting the highest long-term rate of return. But remember, the right portfolio for you as an investor is the one that you're going to keep during the tough times, right? The right investment for you is the one that you're going to keep when you least want to keep it. And remember, as a retiree, you're more interested in not being poorer than you are in being rich. Sometimes you get confused. Sometimes you think, oh, I need to make a ton of money. Well, we hope you make a ton of money. We design the portfolios to get the highest return with a given amount of risk. But let me tell you, if you're retiring or you're about to retire, you are a whole lot more interested in not being poor than you are in being rich.
98% of the people that we've talked with.
And this lady that Keith met with, the advisor, was on a trajectory at 100% equities in the portfolio. There was way too much risk.
What's the point of taking that much risk?
What's the point if they can't? You knew what would happen. And the market goes through a 15 or 20% swing, and you've got a widow who has never had an investment experience before like this, and the portfolio's down hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And we're in an interesting time right now, Pat, because we've been a long period without any sort of major shakeup in the financial markets.
Long.
And we're almost 10 years away since we had the financial crisis, which was very painful for most investors.
It seems a lot closer than 10 years for most investors. Maybe for us, huh?
Because we
were in it.
Yeah, we had a different experience than most.
We were proud of the way our portfolios performed in that marketplace, but still wasn't pretty.
But I think people miscalculate risk today. And if there's anything that's important, if you're close to retirement, is having a good understanding of how your account will or could react during the next sort of downturn. And we're not predicting when it's going to come. We don't know. All we know is things go through cycles. We do know some certain things. We know how things are, the correlations between different assets, and how to build good diversified portfolios. But I think it's important for most people to say, look, you're close to retirement. What's the downside?
Understand the amount of risk you have in your portfolio.
What could go south? And what might that mean to your lifestyle? And for some people, they can withstand all kinds of swings. Doesn't matter. They can maintain their same standard of living. Great. Some people, not so much. But it's important to have a good understanding of these sort of things. This music means we're out of time. Unfortunately, I hope you enjoy your great Memorial Day weekend. And for more information on Hanson McLean or to schedule an appointment with one of our advisors throughout one of our meeting locations, just visit us at HansonMcLean.com. Again, HansonMcLean.com. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.